Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor here with Atlanta Business Radio, and we are continuing our digital marketing series. And today we're going to focus on digital innovation. I got with me my co-host today from AIS Media, Thomas Harpointner. Is that right? How do you say it?
Yeah, it's Harpointner. It's a real tongue twister.
For me, it is, not for you. So what's new in AIS world?
Well, you know, we're coming off of probably the busiest summer we've had in the history of the company, which caught us a little bit by surprise, but it's all good stuff. And now that the Labor Day holiday is over, it is down to the last stretch for a lot of businesses.
That's right. Know, yeah. The end of the summer is here, and now you got to start doing your fall work.
That's right.
Now, who'd you bring with you today?
So today, I'm very excited about a guest today. It's Vishal is director of marketing from an organization we've worked with for almost 4 years now. Vishal, would you say?
You got it.
And we've done a great bit of work with Wake Forest Innovations. It's been an absolutely fantastic experience for us. And I thought he'd have some insights that he'll be able to share, which many businesses and nonprofits can really benefit from.
Well, Vishal, this is Vishal Khanna, the 2015 Content Mark of the Year. Congratulations on that award, Vishal.
Thanks so much. The former Content Mark of the Year.
Former, that's right. There's a new one now.
She received her award just a few days ago.
Now, can you share a little bit about Wake Forest Innovations? What are you guys doing for folks?
Sure. Wake Forest Innovations is a group embedded inside of Wake Forest Baptist Medical Center. That's a leading academic medical center located in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. And what we do specifically is we engage with industry. And when I say industry, I mean pharmaceutical companies, medical device companies, diagnostic companies, biotech companies, as well as investors. And from the external world, what we offer are really two components. First, we offer licensing opportunities for inventions and discoveries made here at Wake Forest Baptist. That could be a new chemotherapeutic. It could be a new medical device. And we work with these external companies to manage the licensing of these technologies from inside of us to outside of them. And to tell you the truth, sometimes we license things inside as well so that we can develop them. On the other side, we offer specialized research services. This includes kinds of research services that pharmaceutical and device companies would need as they're developing a new drug or medical device. As you're developing these drugs and devices, you have to go through some required testing. It starts in the lab, and then it goes through preclinical or animal studies, and finally human trials. And what we do is we market the services of our faculty and our institution to these targeted prospects, pharma device.
Now,
Finally, we have a group called the Center for Applied Learning, and what these folks do is provide sort of hands-on learning for physicians and others in industry. And there's a distinct additional component, which is that we also are engaged in investing internally, helping our own faculty and staff take their nascent ideas and convert it into something that's commercializable or ready for that licensing point.
Yeah, so there's a lot going on at Wake Forest Innovations, right? So, and the reality is in Winston-Salem, Wake Forest and Wake Forest Baptist Medical is very well known, right, Vishal?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, of course, the challenge is getting the word out about the type of work that's happening in Wake Forest Innovations throughout the rest of the country and the world. So would you share a little bit about those challenges and how you've gone about that?
Sure. So as you were saying, definitely regionally, we have a truly established brand, and it's a very, very sort of ubiquitous brand in this regional area. But as you move further and further away from our epicenter, that brand is, of course, weaker. And the reach is different. you know, that being said, we have a lot of niches where we have these faculty and resources that are exceptionally well-known within the industry that they're in. You know, we have experts in drug abuse liability, in oncology, in orthopedics, and so on and so forth. Now, our challenge, though, in marketing was how can we tell these stories, build the brand of our faculty and our staff and these various resources and inventions within our target markets. And Thomas, as you well know, because you were there from the beginning, digital has really been the anchor of our strategy. And within digital, content marketing has been, you know, one of our best strategies that we've utilized, as well as SEO. Both of those have been really strong drivers of engagement and, more importantly, drivers of revenue and lead generation to build that pipeline for our own salespeople.
Now, how do you define engagement?
Well, engagement is a wide swath. So, you know, the reality is there's not 10 million people that we have out there to reach. You know, we're not targeting everybody in the world. And when you really break it down, there's maybe 50,000 to 100,000 people that would be even considered within our buyer's space. And so for us, we're not looking for a million visits of traffic. Instead, what we're looking for is engagement with targeted pharma and device people, people we have identified or people who start to come in through our various inbound strategies. And that's one point. But a more important point is that marketing qualified lead point and when that lead passes over from our world to our various sales groups. Those are real targets, and mainly because those connect to revenue. Now, here's the challenge. In one of our units, our research services, we can quantify the general value of a deal. And, you know, because of that, we can understand our pipeline. And as we develop our you know, marketing qualified leads, we can really think about, well, this is going to translate into, you know, X revenue down the line. When we start looking at our inventions and technologies, it's extremely difficult to quantify the value of a lead. And the reason why is because once we license out that technology, it's out of our hands, one. And two, the value of it is going to be defined by the marketplace itself and by the success or you know, to tell you the truth, failure of that drug as it goes through its final development stages. You know, when you look at standard drugs, you know, 9 out of 10 drugs that leave animal models and go into human models fail. So you're only getting 1 out of 10 that work, and that's a standard across the entire industry. So there's a bit of risk-taking here. That's what we enjoy, though. And if the payoff comes, you know, through licensing a technology, and, you know, we hope through our own work as marketers, you know, the payoff could be immense. In fact, you know, Wake Forest Baptist is pretty well known for something called the WombVac. A very particular medical device that has become used, I think, in I don't know how many people worldwide, but it was a major revenue generator for the institution and, you know, for those who licensed it as well, you know, well above the hundreds of millions point.
Now, when you're, you know, determining the ROI of your marketing, how do you assign value to the digital component?
You know, we have to find some different points to claim value in. And, you know, one of those, and I'll start sort of at the more, you know, top of the funnel, ethereal level. So one of those is, did we, you know, and let's say we're utilizing a storytelling as a strategy. Did this story convert into, you know, the people we know and have identified, engaging with it, defined as reading it for more than 2 or 3 minutes, you know? And that's the first marker. Are we creating a story that gets past the email, past the SEO, past the advertisement, into the user's sort of mindset? And are they reading it and learning about it? That's the first marker. The second marker is, of course, did this person convert in some way? Did they download a white paper? Did they download an ebook? Did they request a meeting? Did they want to know more information? Did they download a primer on that technology? All of these things become our sort of second inflection point. And then, of course, finally, what value was ultimately obtained by that initial inquiry?
And then you can track that too. I mean, then as you go through the funnel, like you said, only 1 out of 10 you know, these things actually happen or commercialized, then that's the big victory at the end of the day. Is,
well, you know, this is again the challenge. When you talk about drug development, that's a 15-year life cycle. Where, you know, a lot of what we're doing now, I'm not going to see the results of. You know, I have a friend who is actually in early stage drug development, and everything he does, maybe he'll see in his lifetime. He probably won't, because it's way, you know, upstream in the process. And so there's, you have to think about this in two ways. There's, when we look at our research services side, yes, we can very much quantify the value, and we can usually quantify it within the year. You know, a closed deal takes, you know, from opportunity to close between 3 months and a year's time. So we can see the results of that, and we have seen the results of that. But when you start looking at our inventions and technologies, you've got a challenge that you may not see the results. You may not be able to put a quantifiable number on it because the, you know, downstream value could be years down the line. And so we have to, for our own definition of success, we have to find a different marker earlier in the pipeline to call it a marketing success. And for us, that success is getting a, on the technology side, getting a potential buyer to request interest and then want to engage with our salespeople. For us, we call that a success, and we'll hang our hat on that.
And then, but that relationship with that buyer, once you have that in place, once that's achieved, then the next thing you have to show them, do you still have to go through this whole digital strategy in order to engage them to, you know, make them aware of your next offering?
Yes, absolutely. And again, you know, there's two distinct businesses. So on this research services side, we engage pretty regularly with our contacts. We try to touch them once a month. And as Thomas well knows, as our agency, you know, they do a lot of those external contact points. So we're always trying to engage with these leads, see how they're engaging with us. You know, because we're not dealing with thousands of leads a day, we're dealing with a small handful. We spend a little extra time on looking at what people are doing. You know, every morning, my digital marketing colleague and I will go and we'll look inside of our marketing automation engine, our DOT, and we'll, you know, look at the leads, you know, who did what today or this week, and, you know, in that point, understand more what we need to do. In fact, at this point, we made a switch, and this was a couple of weeks ago, and it's still in the testing stage. We turned off our automated responses for people downloading a white paper or a brochure, and we're manually responding to these people. And what we want to see is, you know, does this concierge level actually help build that engagement? You know, getting out of this, you know, dear Vishal, thank you for downloading our blah, blah, blah strategy. What if we go and spend 5 minutes and do some research on who this person is and try to make our response in real time contextual?
Of course, the downloading of a white paper or the completion of a form can be considered one success point. Isn't that right?
Oh, absolutely. We definitely consider that a success point. And mm-hmm. Thomas, you know, we try to celebrate that internally. Mm-hmm. You know, this is a tough business. You know, as I was saying earlier, you may not see the value of what you do, you know, mm-hmm. until you're retired, you know, and living in Florida. So mm-hmm. you've got to find a way to celebrate these micro successes. And, you know, again, I think, and this is, you know, I'm going to jump a little ahead, but I think this is really important. When you partner with an agency and you create a relationship that, you know, for example, with us in AIS is nearly 4 years strong now. Those successes are shared successes. You know, a successful agency and client relationship really depends upon sharing what you consider value and sharing those successes. So, you know, for example, you know, when we license the technology out, that's not only our success, and we're not the only people responsible for making it happen. It's our agency as well, and their own insight, A and B, you know, their tactical performance. So it's a right. shared success mm-hmm. that we've got to reward ourselves for.
Now, can you maybe give some advice for other people that are engaging with an external agency? How do you get the most out of the relationship and have it kind of become like you're describing this trusted partnership rather than a vendor relationship?
Sure. Well, you know, you're not going to get it with every vendor, A. And B, you may not want it with everyone. From my perspective, though, it's a requirement for me to have that kind of relationship. Now, it helps that, you know, AIS, which is, you know, really led by Thomas, is an exceptional, you know, performer. And, you know, Thomas himself is pretty darn smart at what he does, you know. And so for us, you know, the greatest value isn't actually them developing an email and sending it out and measuring the effectiveness of it. It's actually the consultation that we get from Thomas when he comes up and visits, or, you know, I call him on the phone. And it's that consultation itself that helps us define our internal strategy. And so if you can find that, person inside of that champion inside of your agency that can play that role and really enable you to see the forest from the trees, you're going to get that extra value. You've got to look for that relationship, and you've got to foster that relationship. It's not that you should just sit there and wait for the agency to do it. You need to reach out and play your own role in that.
And one of the keys at AIS Media that we find for success, and just kind of a tip to other, you know, companies, is first of all, really having a collaborative understanding of, you know, how success is defined. And, you know, what Vishal is explaining today, there's the long-term success, which he may not even see in his lifetime. And there's a short-term success of a business deal. And leading up to that, you know, successes like getting a white paper downloaded or getting an article read. So, you know, really identifying those key performance indicators. We work with, you know, of course, many medical organizations, healthcare companies and the likes. And for each of them, their success, although similar, might be a little bit different. So if you're, you know, engaging in an SEO strategy or a content marketing strategy, for some organizations, it's about leads. You know, for other organizations, it's about getting traffic to the website, getting some type of a conversion. And it, you know, it helps to have a longer term relationship with an organization and an agency, because then both sides, of course, can understand how success is measured. And the consultation can really focus on that joint end goal. Because I think I probably also speak for a lot of our agency, you know, colleagues out there. Most of us would love to have many more long-term relationships, you know, with our partner clients versus constantly turning and churning over and looking for new clients to do business with. So, you know, having a collaborative understanding of success to us is also very important.
Now, in the relationship, though, can you share a little bit about how maybe Thomas pushes you outside of a comfort zone? Because a lot of times a client, you know, back in the day, they told Henry Ford they wanted a faster horse. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that may not have been the best answer for him, at least. So how does, you know, in the leadership side of this and the strategic insight from an agency, how open are you to trying new things and, you know, kind of getting outside of the comfort zone or getting outside of what has been done historically in the industry?
Sure. So I think first and foremost, you know, in at least in our space, which is in, you know, an area that a lot of folks will call technology transfer inside of university environments, most of what we're doing is pretty distinct. You don't really see many marketing departments inside of these groups. So almost by the very nature of our existence, And you know, the very nature that, you know, I was recruited in here, I came from the startup world doing marketing for startup companies. You know, just by the very nature that we exist and we're doing what we do is in its own way unique. A lot of our strategy, you know, was actually developed in partnership with AIS. And so that continued partnership through the, you know, this four-year period has turned into something that is pretty symbiotic. You know, even in, I'll tell you, even in our last design project we were working on together, you know, AIS didn't design the whole thing. We traded stuff back and forth. And by the end of it, you almost couldn't tell who did what, because it was such a sort of back and forth conversation between the two. Now, that being said, in my role inside of this university, I'm pulled in 20 directions every day. You know, I've got to deal with internal audiences. I've got to deal with website management and technical components. I've got to deal with 15 writers doing X, Y, and Z. And so having someone like Thomas, you know, they're providing that, you know, consultation in a very specific way, saying, okay, let's get back to what's going to do conversions, what's going to give you those flags of success. And having him continue to focus on that component lets me go, you know, far left field for a while and then come right back to the center of what really drives our digital success, and it is that strategic and tactical outputs.
Sometimes you get dragged into radio shows.
Exactly.
Well, you know, most marketers, of course, are focused on, you know, outcomes that they want to drive, right? We most know what success looks like, but along the way, you're bound to make some mistakes. So are there some pitfalls that you could share that others might appreciate avoiding?
Sure. And I'll give you two. First, you know, my first year and a half here, again, I come from software companies, and webinars were, you know, our driving force. We did webinars every Friday, and they killed it. They got us so many leads and conversions. So I figured, oh, let me, you know, come here and I'll start doing webinars. I got 1,100 faculty. This is going to be great. We're going to really bring some, you know, revenue in. I tried for over a year to make that happen. And in the entire time, I think I only succeeded once, and it totally faltered. And there's a couple of reasons why. One, our faculty are busy. These are doctors who, you know, in many cases work 12, 14 hours a day. And the idea of getting them to participate in a webinar just was not realistic for them. And two, the kind of information they were presenting, we found we could do a better job in other ways. We started to do insight articles, and we created a content feature we call Discover Innovations, where we're really telling their stories in a different way. We found that if we did an interview with a faculty member for about an hour, we could churn out three pieces of content from there instead. And so what we learned by throwing in the towel on one strategy was we could get so much more benefit from another. That's one example, and that's why you won't see us do any webinars. Second tactic, and this is a very specific one. We used to send out these e-newsletters, and the e-newsletters would have, you know, one lead article and then four sub-articles. And we would spend a lot of time on those sub-articles, you know, those second-tier articles. Well, we found over time that 98% of people who clicked would click on the top story, and only 1 or 2% would click on anything else. Clearly, those the time we were spending on those other stories was not converting in the way we needed it to. And so what we did was we pulled back. And we did this with AIS. We pulled back and we said, okay, let's double down on that top story. If everybody's clicking that, let's make a longer story. Let's put more time into it. Let's establish a more in-depth storytelling strategy. Let's get photographers. Let's really, you know, up our game with that, and let's drop the other stories. And, you know, what we've seen since we did that, and again, remember, you know, two or three leads in the tech space is pretty good. We saw, you know, stories that maybe would get one lead every two or three e-newsletters to every e-newsletter converting at least two or three really strong leads, the kind of leads that our salesperson can take and really work. And it was simply from changing the structure and doubling down on storytelling.
So more wood behind fewer arrows.
Exactly.
So now, are there other agencies you use in different areas that maybe you can share how those relationships work?
So when we speak about digital, we only work with AIS by preference. You know, we like to work with them, and we have a symbiotic relationship. We do work with other agencies for print design. Our own institution has an internal agency that we work with. And, you know, I should mention that along with everything else we were just talking about, Thomas's company and I and my group here also manage a place, innovation hub called Wake Forest Innovation Quarter. It's one of the fastest growing innovation, downtown innovation districts in the country. And so for that space, which is works a lot faster than other ones, you know, we have print agencies we work with. But as far as digital goes, we're pretty solid with just AIS.
And what do you got? Anything interesting happening at the center upcoming?
We always have interesting things. You just caught me by surprise. I'll tell you, you know, this is what I like is, and and it's really not going to give you a good answer, but it's the truth. I'll go into these meetings with, and my colleagues and I will go into these meetings with our colleagues on the technology side. These folks work in our Center for Technology, Innovation, and Commercialization. And we'll meet with them. We usually meet with them once a month. We'll go through, well, what's your new technologies? What do you have on the table? And they'll tell us these fantastic ideas or something that Effecting is working on that, you know, it's going to blow everything away. And we get so excited. We say, oh, we can build such a great story around this. And at the last moment, they tell us, well, it's not patented yet. You're not allowed to say anything to anybody. And it's right, you know, for a marketer who's always looking for the story and the angle, that, you know, can drive a person crazy. Now, that being said, once things are at that patentable moment, once we own our intellectual property on it, it's fair game. One of the things I really like, and you know, it's a very simple device, you know, and some of our technologies are extremely simple, but useful. This is called a single prong dual port nasal cannula. And so nasal cannulas are these tubes that go in your both of your nostrils, and one delivers oxygen and the other takes carbon dioxide out. And when you're under anesthesia, it's really important to, you know, have this work in the way it needs to. Well, there's a distinct problem that ocular surgeons face. And the problem is that if I'm, say, an ocular surgeon, I'm working on the left side of your face, it's really prohibitive to have a tube running across the left side of your face, which is what these dual, you know, these two tubes are. Well, we had a faculty member here, a clinician, who said, well, why don't I combine both of them in one tube so we can just run a single tube across the left side and the surgeon will have an unencumbered space to work on the right side. It's an extremely simple answer to a simple problem. And to me, that's the sort of beauty, especially in devices, that you can have a faculty member who has very distinct experience in experiencing the problem itself, have that, you know, light bulb moment, and then partner with our group, and we'll help them convert that moment into a real prototype. So for me, that's one of my my favorite technologies right now. You know, we're actually building a bunch of prototypes, and we're getting ready for a conference where we're going to have all these prototypes in hand to show to people at this conference.
Now,
of course,
now this is,
you know,
actually
everything. There's a digital campaign behind it.
Now, this is actually a very interesting, you know, product as an agency to tackle, because this is what Vishal just explained is something that didn't exist before, right? And you know, often people, you know, let's say an organization has a new product or service they want to get out there. And the first question is, well, how do we get the word out? You know, where does search engine marketing, search engine optimization, social media come in? How do we get the word out about this exciting new product? Well, the fact of the matter is when you're creating a search engine strategy, how do you optimize something that doesn't yet exist, right? People they don't know to search for this type of invention or this type of a product. When we go to search, you know, if we're looking for a dentist, we know we're looking for a dentist. If you're looking for a car, if you're looking for, you know, some type of procedure, you know, obviously you can create a search engine optimization strategy around that. But for a brand new type of product or service that's reaching the market, it requires a little something different. And that's where content marketing and social media and content amplification comes in. People go to Google usually because they're searching for something very specific. But if you have something brand new that you've got to get out to the market, you have to get a little bit more creative than that and actually, you know, get this information in front of people that don't really know it exists. Isn't that right, Vishal?
Oh, I think without a doubt, you know, that's a requirement, you know, and it takes, I think another important thing to add is it takes patience. You can't expect, you know, a story you told 6 months ago to convert 6 months, and you can't say, well, you know, hey, look, that story didn't convert. We're doing something wrong. We got to change everything. You have to have a little more patience. You know, we have a story we did, I think, I can't even remember how long ago, but it was a pretty distinct time ago. And it's still getting readership, and we still believe that it has the potential to convert. And the respect of the time it takes, the respect that a story can live much longer than, you know, that 3 weeks when you put your dollars behind it in LinkedIn and Facebook and, you know, sent your X amount of emails out. You've got to have that patience. And But you also, at the same time, have to have a distinct strategy. So, you know, when we work with AIS, you know, a lot of times what we'll do is at the start of a project, we're defining what keyword space we want to try to own. And that's that longer term strategy when we can start to get, you know, what Rand Fishkin over at Moz calls the 10X content. When we can start to own that space, we really get a value point and a value inflection that, you know, we believe will convert through time, and we see converts through time.
And that's a good place for social media. You know, we often compare social media to a cocktail party versus, you know, take Google as a conference. You know, people go to a conference with a very specific purpose in mind. They know why they're there. If you're going to the car show, the boat show, right? Software conference. But when you're on Facebook, you know, you're there casually. But there is a place for that. So if you have a product like this, this may not be a consumer product per se, but for many organizations that are trying to get the word out about a new product or service to the general public, Facebook is a good platform for that. People, you know, they go there to chat with their friends and then suddenly see a story about something that may appeal to them. One of the stories right now coming out of Wake Forest Innovations is about this diabetes testing for the African-American community. And that's a unique challenge and opportunity because what we found is about one-third of African-Americans are affected by this. I'll let Vishal you know, speak to this, but that's a perfect example of something that really needs to get out to the general public.
Yeah, and that's a dual-edged sword, I think, as well. And this is something very specific to marketing scientific discoveries. We have to depend upon real data and real information, but there's this variable that you have to deal with where you can't promise too much to people. And so there's, you know, the conversation between scientist and scientist is one thing. You know, they speak a very distinct language. But when you start to put out something saying, oh, here's an ideal new treatment for brain tumors, well, you're making a promise to the consumer who comes across that. And that's a dangerous promise to make for people who are, you know, there's nothing more personal or scary than a serious disease or health problem. And you know, it's a little bit off topic from where we were, but I think it's important to say when you're in healthcare marketing, you have a moral imperative to not make promises, to not overpromise, to not get consumers excited as you're trying to engage with your business audience. And I think that's really essential, is understanding the message in that way. You know, so you probably won't see in most of our stories us ever saying this is the perfect, you know, X. Or as a good friend and colleague of mine said, he's talking about the movie Elf. And he was talking about the scene where Will Ferrell goes into this, you know, coffee shop, and there's a sign that says the greatest coffee in the world. And he comes in and he says, hey, I want to get the greatest coffee in the world. Well, of course, it's not the greatest coffee in the world, because the greatest coffee in the world doesn't exist. And I think in the same way, you know, we like to temper our stories a bit so that we're never promising the magic bullet cure for anything. Because if there's a magic bullet cure for anything, we'll never see that health problem again. And that's really key to understand within the space of science and health marketing.
Now, can you share maybe an example or a story that you're most proud of that's been achieved through your relationship?
Sure. And you know, this is a story. And the reason I like it is because the story became a surprise. We were, my writer and I were going in and we were meeting with a faculty member here, very esteemed, you know, faculty member. And we walked in with a very specific idea of what we were going to write about. And our, you know, our questions were all about, oh, let's, you know, asking about this one topic. I can't even place the topic, but it was just a general thing about, you know, the importance of a diverse population in clinical trial recruitment. Well, as we're talking, this doctor, Dr. Sarah Berga, starts talking about how a child's genes can pass up to the mother, and the mothers can pass down to the child, and we even see sometimes these genes passing to grandparents. That was fascinating to me, but what became even more fascinating was that your individual genes themselves could be male or female, So, you know, you, Thomas, could have a female genes in you as well as male genes. And when you're engaged in drug development, there may be different responses to the gene you're targeting based on its sex. And so the importance of sex differences in drug development, not just at the macro level, but at the micro level of genes, that was a fascinating topic. We came in with no idea of it. And I think what I'm most proud of is that we were able to pivot in the middle of an interview, throw away our old topic, which is good enough, you know, and really embrace this little story that we believed instinctively. And I think, you know, a part of what marketers have to do, or storytellers we have to do, is be able to work off of our own instincts. And we believed that it was an interesting tale to tell. And so for me, being able to pivot that way is definitely something that I'm proud of. Now, I'm most proud of things that convert into sales, of course. So, you know, if I tell a story and I can connect it to a sale, I'm much happier.
Amen to that. Well, thank you so much for being part of the show today, Vishal.
Thank you.
Now, if somebody wanted to learn more about the Wake Forest Innovation, where do you go? Website for you guys?
Sure. Yeah, you can visit wakeforestinnovations.com. That's innovations, plural. And you can learn all about us and sign up to get updates. We'd love to start talking to you. And if you sign up, you'll probably get a personal email from me.
Well, thank you again for being part of the show. And thank you, Thomas, for putting this segment together. Again, this is Lee Cantor with Atlanta Business Radio. This is our digital marketing series, and we're focusing on digital innovations with my co-host today, Thomas Harpointner, with AIS Media. And the website for AIS, Thomas?
www.aismedia.com.
Thank you. Thank your guest. This is Lee Cantor. We will see you all next time on Atlanta Business Radio.
Thank you, Lee.